When I was asked by Maura to step in to a short talk down at Queen Mary's yesterday, it was only after I'd accepted that she forwarded me the details. I have to say, it's with some trepidation that I sit in a room of, and I think you've already been referred to as Bayesians. I didn't know one can be a Bayesian, but I'm not here in defence of tea. My understanding is that here we are, whether it's for better or for worse, but here we are. And what I can perhaps offer is some indications of what might be helpful for you, and I hope you'll forgive me, as Bayesians, in your attempts to demonstrate that us lawyers simply don't understand it, we're ignorant of this, the decision of tea is a demonstration of that, and that the proper presentation of forensic evidence in the courts can be done in the way that you insist. And I say that for this reason. I'm not a defender or a proponent of either Bayes or the decision in Tea, because I may get a brief tomorrow in which I will be seeking to argue that a Bayesian analysis, Bayesian reasoning is exactly what is needed in this case to overturn this manifestly unsafe conviction. As a lawyer, I start from an entirely neutral standpoint. In this case, it suited our purposes. And I put it no higher than that. It suited our purposes to criticise the way in which the decision had been reached. And I stand by this, without talking about Bayes. It was manifestly open to criticism. On the other hand, it may be that in the case I'm instructed in tomorrow, the Bayesian reasoning is exactly what I seek to rely upon. So I, whilst yes, in tea we put forward those arguments and were successful, but I hope you can see me coming from, in fact, a very neutral perspective. I've read, and I appreciate it's probably a rather early version, but Professor Fenton's article, one with Martin Neal. I have to say, from my reading, as much as I'm able to comprehend, it's a very sensible viewpoint. It seems to say, well, here we are. It's our responsibility as Bayesians to explain things better. Because whatever the position is, even if we as lawyers are ignorant, then we have to have it spoon-fed to us. And we have to have it spoon-fed to juries as well, because this is the bottom line. A judge is going to have to sum this up to a jury in about two or three paragraphs. Unless you, as a group, with diverse views, with substantial statistical and mathematical knowledge, can reduce what you're attempting to say to a few paragraphs, you may as well give up now. Now, I know that's going to be a very difficult thing to do, but that's when you were asked what concerns. I think that may be what you're going to have to look towards. And I'll move on to, and I'm perhaps, rather than dealing with some of the more general points that have been made, perhaps going to raise some specific points arising from the judgment. Not in order to get an answer today, or even to seek to give one, but to raise some points that you may want to discuss in your ongoing meetings. But it's worth saying this, that whatever you're going to be doing in this meeting and in ongoing ones, it is important. He's called Tyrone Wong, Mr. T. He was a young man in his early 20s. He was arrested in a taxi on the way to hospital. His girlfriend was in labour. and he was stood trial for murder. The eyewitness evidence said that the man coming in the back window, where the footprint was, and the DNA, said he was white. Mr. Wong is black. Nonetheless, juries give what scientists say a great deal of weight. And Mr. Wong was convicted of murder. He had a life sentence with a minimum of 27 years before he could be considered for parole. That meant his daughter, who was born that day, would be 27. Before he could be considered for parole. It would mean he was going to be well into his 50s before he was released. The judgment, the conviction was overturned. There was a retrial, and in the summer, after half an hour of deliberation, the jury acquitted him. So whether the judgment in T is right or wrong, whether Bayes is right or wrong, it's important. And so I'm very glad to see that there are such a large number of people sitting around a table willing to at least make an effort to get this right. Dealing with the specifics then, I find myself agreeing on something with Mr. Renison, and that is the word transparency. I must have repeated the word transparency about 50 times in the skeleton argument. If you could get one word through, it was that. Because whether Bayes is right or wrong, what put Bayes on the back foot in the judgment of T, and very much on the back foot, is the lack of transparency. Courts don't like that. I think T could have been an entirely different case if, when doing the expert report for trial, the expert had explained how he had come to his ruling. Because if he'd have explained how he came to his ruling, then counsel would have been able to cross-examine it. And it may be, and who knows, that the Court of Appeal, when looking at the safety of the conviction, because that's what they're concerned about, not whether Bayes is right or wrong, but whether the conviction is safe, would have come to a different opinion. Because ironically, what happened was that the scientist took a number of conservative viewpoints on part of his entry into the formula. But unknown, because the formula wasn't known, defense counsel launched into a cross-examination that was disastrous. And what the jury were told in summing up was an entirely different thing than the very conservative approach taken by the expert. So the word transparency, I would say, is the headline word throughout whatever decision you come to. The courts will find it palatable if it is transparent. And yes, that does give rise to questions of disclosure. There are concerns and that juries will, and this was matters that were raised in T, that juries were going to get diverted into difficult, complex matters of statistics. Well, in the vast majority of cases, the headlines will be the only thing that goes in front of the jury. But it is very important that a defence team, and when I say team, that could include the barrister, the solicitor, the defendant themselves, or any expert that they seek to instruct, is able to see how an expert came to their opinion. Because we are in an adversarial system. One expert can say one thing, and it must be the defendant's right, must it not, to say, well, when you came to that bit of your reasoning, you relied upon this. This, we say, is wrong. How, therefore, does that affect your reasoning on that? And if there is transparency, then I think you really will be taking a massive step forward, certainly in the eyes of the appellate courts. I note in some of the journal articles that have been written in response to T that there is an approach taken to suggest, certainly in one of them, that, well, how do you expect us to reject Bayes and yet you insist on full transparency? Are we meant to sort of conceal our deviant probabilistic thinking? Well, I see what is being said, but I think the response to that is to be confident of the way you approach it, to explain the way you approach it, and those aspects of T that were problematic, namely the question of transparency and the question of the database on which I'll come on to, doesn't necessarily mean that a Bayesian reasoning has been entirely rejected. Finally, on the subject of transparency, well, it may mean, and you may be surprised as to this, that there is a large imbalance between what is evidence and what is unused material in the case of an expert. In T, the evidence in the case consisted of about 150 pages of witness statements and probably about 150 pages of documentary exhibits. The unused material, which I had to read, probably consisted of between 7,500 and 10,000 pages. So us lawyers are used to an imbalance between evidence and that which falls behind the evidence. Moving on to the question of a database, there are a few questions that arise. The big question, of course, and Professor Fenton has referred to that, is for the purpose of Bayesian reasoning, do you need a database? I accept that, and having read a number of the articles about this, the reasoning process does not always require a database. But and I think they were referred to, and I did note it down, I hope you'll forgive me. Did you call it a background database or a
reference database?
A reference database. But where there is a reference database, and I'll give a practical example in the case of T, it was shoes that had been examined by the Forensic Science Service. Well, then the question arises, firstly, what is a robust statistical database? And secondly, is it in fact possible in some types of investigation ever to get a robust statistical database? Well, to answer that final one with reference to footwear, the difficulty that the criminal justice system has with it, that the judges in T had, and to inject a personal note I have, is this, that reference was made within the formula adopted, the P times C times W times D. P was pattern frequency, and that was made with reference to the number of shoes that had been examined. The general concern in terms of that reference database is how is it possible to have a reference database of shoes when surely they must be very specific to different areas, to different types of people living there. It could well be that Foot Locker had a sale on that week, or that the cool kid at the local school had bought one and so everyone else had bought one. How can it be when there are counterfeit shoes being made? How is it possible to come up with a robust database about the shoes that might be worn by a young male living in Moss Side? And that may be the sort of question you have to ask yourself. And I know there is a contrary argument, and I know there are arguments about the extent to which a database is
used in Bayes' reasoning, but in some cases it is. And if it is going to be used, if it is going to be relied upon as it was in T and yet not openly stated, it surely must be one that is either robust or one that in another way can be said to be reliable. And that goes beyond my competences. And I hand that over to you. But databases are something that the criminal justice system is particularly concerned with. I'm just going to take a moment to have a look at my time. Where am I? Five more minutes. Some of the other matters that you may wish to look at. The evaluative scale for the purposes of the likelihood ratio. There's no suggestion that the evaluative scale has been rejected. What, and it may be said, is somewhat simplistic in the case of T, you are left with is this, that either there is definitely a match, either there isn't a match, or you're in the position where there could be. And if it is a case of could be, then you are permitted to use an evaluative scale. But where it is only class characteristics, size or pattern, that can be matched, the court has said in most cases, it is difficult to see how you can go beyond simply saying, could have made. If there are individual characteristics, damage, for example, then an evaluative scale is possible. I would ask you to consider the fact that an evaluative scale as relied upon in T, and apparently the one that is most relied upon, and you'll forgive me for the simplistic approach taken, always seems to point in favour of the prosecution case. There isn't a scale that takes it away from the prosecution case. And a scale, that sort of scale I know is used by some American providers. Perhaps some definitive research and explanation to laymen such as me would be helpful. And there is a culture question. The culture in the criminal justice system is that above everything else, the jury is the best forum for making assessments of the evidence as a whole. There is an enormous reluctance to allow, as might be the case in a pure statistical approach, to evaluating separate parts of the evidence. To give you an example, the way that I hope you will forgive me, the perception that in a Bayesian reasoning, including a likelihood ratio, that separate values are given for separate pieces of evidence that then in appropriate circumstances are multiplied together. The court's concern is that that is trespassing on the function of the jury. It's for the jury to look at the value they ascribed to all the separate pieces of information. And so in terms of headlines, transparency, discussion about databases, perhaps a consideration of the evaluative scale, and the cultural question about statistics giving separate values for each piece of evidence. If those perhaps might be something that can be helpful. And if those matters are looked into, and if some sort of consensus can be arrived upon, because the criminal courts are going to be very reluctant to take any steps beyond what is the current position, when looked into it myself, doesn't appear to be a clear consensus. And certainly even just from having read Professor Fenton's explanation, that even when you look at the base level, looking at whether there are standard textbooks on this, that the standard textbooks
are very light in their approach to Bayes. So I hope that wasn't a defence of tea, and it was rather more an open-minded approach to the use of Bayes.